Is the mic on? Episode 82. What's wrong with Orny Adams? My guest will be able to answer this, and I'll introduce him in a minute. But why? I live in Los Angeles. I don't know where you're listening to this all over the world. But here, we have so much crime. My question is, why? Why would I pay for anything in a store anymore? We have a chain that sells liquors here. I don't want to say which one, but they sell beverages and more. But I'm not going to malign them. But I was there and I just wanted to buy one bottle of mezcal. And right before I got there, a guy had walked in with a cart, filled it up with liquor, and then just pushed it out and left. And didn't pay. And I saw the employees talking about it. They said he's here every week at this time and does it. And I said, well, why don't you do something about this? Why don't you call the police aren't going to do anything. We have him on video. We know what kind of car he drives. They never arrest him. The store policy is not to even approach them. So the employees sit there and watch this guy steal bottle after bottle after bottle. And then I'm paying. Why am I paying?
I don't know.
Why am I? So I'm sitting there buying my $50 bottle and I'm being a good person, but I feel like an idiot. And so I go to pay it, and it's on sale, by the way, for $43.99.
Oh, then get two.
Well, but I have to have their club card. So I said, I don't have the club card. And they said, well, you need the club card for the discount. And I said, a guy just walked out of here with an entire shopping cart of liquor. Can you meet me halfway? Can you meet me halfway? What's wrong with Orny Adams? Episode 82. My guest today, I'm putting the headsets on, Jim Clemente is back, former FBI profiler Jim Clemente.
Right.
And we're
going
to, good, we're going to get into all this stuff.
All right.
I'm excited. So what happened was, Jim, I'm bringing this down, Jim went on a road trip. He went to Arizona.
And whatever, New Mexico.
New Mexico. And you listened to my podcast.
I did. I listened to about 17 episodes of your podcast.
And you're still sane?
Well, I didn't say that. I mean, it was an amazing insight into your brain.
Yeah.
Like how you developed that podcast. Like going back to the beginning, the first episodes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is like mining Orny's mind.
Wow.
Because I hadn't met you then.
Yeah.
So you're just moving into the whole pandemic and
yeah.
You're dealing with all that and then all the crazy stuff and your perspective on things. It was great. It was fun.
So
you made me laugh a lot on the road.
And so you said to me, hey, I want to discuss this. And all weekend you were texting me. You're like, hey, I want to discuss, and I'll give like an example, phantom noise syndrome.
Yes.
Or the phone emergency signal. So all weekend I'm getting, we need to discuss this. We need to discuss. And then this morning I said, are you ready? And you said, add this one to the list. And I said, what list?
Yeah, and you did say that.
And you said, oh, you're not keeping a list? Like I'm your secretary?
No, but you're the host. I thought you write up the script.
No, I'm famous. I don't.
Oh, you are
when you're famous.
Famous,
you don't write up the list. Come in because
with the list.
Yes, because I feel like.
But I was driving and you were pissed off that I was having Siri send you messages.
I like, because it kept saying sent with Siri. And I'm like,
well, I didn't say tell them that it was sent with Siri.
Right. Right.
But they just did it anyway.
So you have an entire list of things that you've listened to. Do you want to tell us about the trip first? How was it?
Yeah, I'll tell you. Well, this was a trip that I really needed. You know, it's been very stressful, work and life and all that stuff. And I love natural hot springs. I think, you know, ever since I had cancer and all that, I mean, it makes my body feel so much better to be in this warm natural water. And a lot of them have lithium and other minerals in them. And I think it just totally relaxes me. And I needed to de-stress. So I got in the car and I drove. And I started out at a place called El Dorado Hot Springs.
Okay.
And that's outside of Phoenix. And then I went to Albuquerque and Flagstaff, then Albuquerque, then Truth or Consequences, then Tucson, then back to Phoenix.
And you're alone. You're doing this alone.
Yeah.
It's like a cathartic cleanse
of
your soul. And then you ruin it by listening to my podcast.
Exactly. That's what happened. But I got obsessed. It was amazing.
But
you do this on purpose, I think.
Uh-uh.
But when you set up the episodes, you say, well, I was just going to talk about this, and now I got to talk about this, and we'll have to save that for next week. And so you just want to go to the next one. And what happened to this guy? How could you? It was great.
I'm telling you, I don't. It's just my mind has a million. Like, I've got a million notes for today, but Sometimes I don't get to things.
Yeah. And so you have to do them next week and next week.
Right.
But that I loved it. And it kept me focused. And I literally, look, for me, it's the weirdest thing. If I have to be at a meeting, driving is a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
But if I don't have to be anywhere, driving is relaxing for me. Like, I literally just chill, listen to music, or Orny Adams, yeah, and figure out what's wrong with, like, Orny
you were
Adams.
Saying you were going back and forth on my podcast to 80s music.
Yes, I was, because I love 80s music.
It's a great mix.
Oh, it's classic.
I feel like there should be a Jim Clemente 80s mix that should accompany my podcast.
There you go.
Go back and forth.
And all the time, if I could sing, I would have definitely sent in a version of your theme song.
And I've asked your brother, you have a brother named Peter, who is in a band called Diving for Pearls.
Right, and he plays guitar and drums, and he hasn't done it, huh?
He hasn't done it. To me, he looks completely different than you. He looks like the guitarist for Queen.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Paul, whatever. What's that guy's name?
Don't ask me names. I'm bad with names. Yeah. But anyway, Orny, it was great. I felt like I got to know you so much better because sort of developing this podcast and the people, the friends that you interviewed and the people that you interviewed and the places that you were and the things that you were talking about, all that stuff gave me great insights about you.
Well, you just leaked something. So if anybody picked up on it, you said developing this podcast, people don't know that we've been secretly trying to develop something.
We have, you and I together. And to me, it's the thing I'm most excited about. Because look, everybody knows because they can hear it. You make me laugh. And I need that. And everybody needs that in their lives, especially now. And I've exposed friends and family to your podcast and your specials online on YouTube, and everybody has loved it. And they what makes them laugh and me laugh about you is that your perspective is just this off that nobody can expect what's going to happen.
But I think your perspective is this off.
Oh, please.
And we banter, which is what's so much fun. Like when we were in a pitch meeting a couple of weeks ago, and the banter. So I always say, you know, like we put together a reel, like there's a whole presentation that happens before we get into the room. And I tell everybody, you've got to see us together because it's dynamic.
It works.
It just works. Yeah. It's fun. And I think it's great because you need to laugh in particular.
Yeah.
It seems like you have a new problem every day.
Every day. But
I feel like you have Munchausen
syndrome by proxy.
By Jim Clemente. Meaning, like,
it's just Munchausen then. If you're doing things to yourself. But
is that true?
Yeah, Munchausen is when you cause pain or suffering to yourself for pity. And Munchausen by proxy is when you hurt somebody else so that you get pity.
Where did that come from? Was there actually a Munchausen? It sounds like a German doctor.
I'm sure it was. Yes.
So Munchausen by proxy are people that hurt their kids to get attention.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And I see there's more Munchausen by Munchausen,
right,
which I diagnose you as Munchausen by.
But I think they're calling it factitious disorder now. They've changed. They've dropped the Munchausen part of it. I have no idea why, but they're always doing that.
Yeah. Here's the other thing why Jim and I work so well together is because you have so many facts. You're so knowledgeable. And I
say things that are crazy, right?
No, my dad loves it. My dad said, you know, you got a lot of friends that you think are smart, but this guy, Jim, is smart, you know? And I said, no, he really is.
I like your dad, man. I like your dad. First of all, he sends in questions for me, which I love. That's so cool. And second of all, obviously, he recognizes, I'm not saying that I'm smart, but I have had a very different career. I mean, to go from, you know, being a, you know, sort of a nerd in high school, and maybe when I was in college a little bit, to law school, to being a prosecutor, to be an FBI agent, to be an FBI profiler, to being a writer, producer of Criminal Minds.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty crazy career path.
Yeah. And you're still working on Criminal Minds, right?
Yeah, it's still going. And, you know, we're into season 17, but there's a writer's strike, so nothing's happening
now. Have you been credited as writing episodes? Is your name?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. See, I haven't.
Yeah, I know. You don't watch my work. Yeah. You have me watch yours or listen to yours.
Yes. But, no, I'm a big fan. I've listened to your podcast. I've been on your podcast.
I know.
And my mom's a fan, too. I shouldn't leave out my mom.
Oh.
Yeah.
Your mom's great, then.
Yeah.
What's amazing, you know, there's a physicist that goes on and he does things on TV and Instagram. He has little videos and he talks about the amazing things in the universe that people don't know about. He is brilliant. Mm. And so I listen to him a lot. And one of the things that he said is like the most fascinating thing that people don't realize is that there have been about 100 billion humans in the entirety of existence, right? 100 billion.
Okay.
But the number of potential humans that could have been is 100 billion times 100 billion times more.
Okay.
So if you actually were one of the people that get to live because your parents got together and your gene pool mixed in the perfect mixture for to make you, that's a friggin' amazing thing.
Right.
Like just to be able to be alive. And so when I think of your parents getting together and making you, boy, your parents must
I'd rather you not think about
special.
My parents getting together.
I wasn't meaning the act of it. But,
what are some of these missed opportunities? Is this this sounds like something like, are we talking about abortion? I don't want to get into
that. No, I'm not talking about that.
Masturbation? What's causing these missed opportunities?
No, but even, you know, when people have sex,
yeah,
you know, there's lots of sperm and you
one
know,
egg?
Only one of them.
One egg.
Only one of them, unless you have fraternal twins, then there's two eggs.
But isn't the egg splitting?
No, that's identical. Fraternal is two eggs.
This is what my dad loves about you. You just have all the facts. I know nothing. Turns out I know nothing. All I want to know, going back to the beginning of the episode, is why? Why would Los Angeles and other cities announce we're not going to prosecute certain crimes? Because then they just go out and do the crime. Why not just...
Three words.
Not say anything.
Three words. Ignorance. Ignorance.
Yeah.
They're stupid. All they're doing is encouraging that. If they want to actually not enforce nonviolent crimes, keep it friggin' silent so people don't know it's open season.
Right.
Why would they do
I
that?
I don't know that. It's that's what I wanted to ask you. So you agree.
Because I agree.
There's also Malcolm Gladwell had a book where he talked about cities started just fixing small things like broken windows.
Yeah, that's the Rudy Giuliani when he was sane. He did that in New York. He did that in New York and cleaned up the city. I mean, the city was just going downhill. Garbage strikes. There was mountains of garbage on the side of the road.
You wouldn't go into Times Square.
It was horrible.
Lewd and lascivious behavior.
Well, not for that reason, but you wouldn't go because it stunk and there was crime.
Yeah.
And he just fixed broken windows. It's the broken window fix thing theory. And people started cleaning up their acts. And people respected boundaries. And people and the crime started going away. People started really being invested in the city again.
So announcing that we're not going to prosecute certain crimes
is causing the opposite.
It's the antithesis.
Yes. Which is one of the reasons why so many people, I think it was 600,000 since the pandemic started, have left Los Angeles.
Mm.
And I think San Francisco is suffering the same thing. And California is going from the most populous state to below Arkansas and Mississippi.
And I tell people it can turn around like New York turned around. But to be honest, one of my sisters is planning a trip. Both my sisters are planning a trip out here.
Yeah, you told them to get a gun?
Well, no, I don't want to scare them. But they one of them wants to start in San Francisco and drive down. And I said, you might not, you know, I know a few years ago before the pandemic, you were planning a trip and you wanted to go to San Francisco, but it's really changed. They're closing flagship, you know, Whole Foods and Targets are being closed because of the crime and on the streets, it seems dangerous. It's just not what it was.
No.
So I said, maybe come here, go to San Diego, go to Santa Barbara. And then she's like, well, what would we see in Los Angeles? And I thought, well, I could take them down the street to see the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And I thought, but there's
but
a lot of crime
only
there.
During the day.
Right.
And you could take them to the Griffith Observatory, which is cool.
Then I thought Venice, same thing. Huge crime, homeless problem. Like it's dirty. Yeah. It's not what it once was. And then I thought, well, where can you take? So I said, I got to be honest with you. It's really bad out here right now. Like maybe I should take you to Target and I'll show you how we lock up the laundry detergent, the toothpaste, like the essentials. Because people just walk in there and steal. So because they're stealing, our prices are going up, what we pay, the
of
honest
course.
People. And then if I want to get toothpaste, a $3 tooth.
You have to get somebody to come help you.
I have to summons. I have to press a button, which doesn't work. No way. You want to know what's wrong with this system? There's no way that button works. It doesn't. Who's it ringing? Is there somebody in the back just waiting to jump in?
It's a placebo button.
Yeah.
It is.
There's no way it works. It's as stupid as the button that Staples has that you put on your desk. Remember they used to pitch this button you'd press when you need
it? Oh, yeah. But it's just like what you said about going to Home Depot. I mean, I feel the same way. It used to be. From your act.
Yeah.
In the beginning of Home Depot, you would go there and they had contractors.
Yeah.
Who knew they were in an aisle with the materials that they knew about, which they'd use professionally. Now, there's no people around with those orange aprons. And then when you find a person, they have to take out a little hand computer and punch in things and say, okay, it's all 32,
No, they go on, they Google it. Find out the aisle. And they don't care. There's actually no passion almost everywhere you go in this day and age. Nobody's working where they want to work. That's why when I walk up on stage and I have that opening line, which I won't say. And by the way, if you're in Los Angeles next week, I'll be at the Comedy and Magic Club Thursday.
I'll be there.
Jim will be there. Don't say, because if you're stalkers now, they're going to. And then.
Well, we do have. We have some co-stalkers, don't we?
Let's not get into it. That's June 8th. June 9th, I'll be at the Ice House in Pasadena, California. So I'll be at the Comedy and Magic Club on Thursday, June 8th in Hermosa Beach. Friday, I am at the Ice House. Saturday, I hop on a plane. I'm going to North Carolina. I'm doing a private show.
Ooh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's
where the money is.
That pays. I'll be at the I'll be at the Laugh Factory tomorrow night. And I was on vacation. I went to Joshua Tree.
Oh.
To do what you did, but without the hot springs. To just unwind my brain. Now, what I didn't realize was there's a big element of like freaks down there that are prepping for this apocalypse. They're just off-gridders.
So were they digging holes and bunkers and all that?
All sorts of malarkey. Like you just go, whoa. They have.
You sure you want to say that out loud?
Yeah, they got the flags. They got all sorts of, there's an undercurrent there that isn't so hippie progressive as I thought it might be. But I went to a bar each night and ordered this great drink that was grapefruit. And there were two other ingredients. And there was this one tequila that I thought was mezcal, which I thought was great. Okay. And I'm always looking for a new mezcal. Okay. I'm looking for two things. If you're listening, I need new blinds. And I'm willing to take a sponsor. I need new blinds for one of my bedroom. And
are they blackout blinds?
Yes,
or you want the see-through kind? So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I need mezcal to blackout, and I need blackout lines to blackout. I actually don't drink that much, but I tried this mezcal. I thought it was great, and I reached out to them on social media, and they're going to come tomorrow night to my show and bring me some.
Wow.
Which this will have already aired by then. This will air on Monday, so I'm excited to, and I'll mix the drink on the air, because if they give me some stuff, I'm going to give them a little, little thank you, on-air thank you.
That's awesome.
For sure.
So while I was driving, podcast brought up so many issues in my head, like some of the topics you discussed and some of the periphery things that you didn't get to. And, and I also related to a bunch of things that I never even anticipated.
So do you think the first time you saw me on stage, you reached out on Twitter? Do you think innately or inside of you, you felt a connection that you didn't fully understand yet? And now having listened to all these episodes, it's sort of
It reaffirms it. Yes.
Okay.
Well, clearly, I knew, and I'm trying not to get your head too big so you could still fit out of this the big yellow when we're done. But I knew that you were very intelligent, and your brain, the synapses in your brain, fire so friggin' fast. It's so amazing, and I love that because I used to be like that. many years ago.
Oh no, it can go away.
Before I burned out, yes. Oh. I mean, I've had a few, shocking experiences in my life. Let me put it that way. So, but I saw that and I recognized that. I didn't know what kind of a person you were. I knew that you were intelligent and you were funny as hell. But getting to know you as a person has been amazing. First of all, even though you're angry at a lot of things, in your comedy and somewhat in your life, you're a really nice guy. You're a nice person.
But I don't want that to
I know
get
you
out
don't
there.
Want
so
that
we'll
to get out there.
Out.
So
we
edit that out.
Yeah, we'll
you have
that.
No empathy. I'll give
no,
you that.
No, I have plenty of empathy.
I know you
but
do.
But do you realize this is part enlightening and exciting that you have this opinion of me, but it's also scary that a FBI profiler
was thinking about you.
Is profiling me for 17 episodes.
Well, yeah, but I have a lot more. I have like, you know, 60 more episodes to get to. So I can't wait. But the fact is that you brought up some really important issues. And also there were just some things that I was kind of nerding out, FBI profiling, nerding out, because I was like, oh, I should tell him this and I should tell him that. Because like, for example, if you don't mind, I'll just launch right into it.
Yeah.
When you talk the psychopathology of somebody who does catfishing.
Right.
Like, who is that person? Why would they do it? Well, I think there's, in every kind of behavior, this is the first thing you should know.
Okay.
There's a spectrum of behavior. There's a continuum of people between two extremes. Okay. So you have one extreme where there's people who just want to hurt other people. They want to find a way to hurt and embarrass somebody else. Mm. And that's why they're catfishing. On the other side is people who have absolutely no self-image, who hate themselves, despise themselves, don't even think they rise to the level of despicable. And so they're trying to create a false life with somebody else who they know will never be able to find out who they are. Well, they believe that.
Uh-huh.
And they so they feel protected. And so they can sort of live out these fantasy lives and have this false sense of intimacy with somebody. So then you have all this gray area in between. You have somebody who's kind of in the middle, who's kind of wants to hurt people and kind of has no self-image.
Okay. When you say people want to hurt people, there's people like to say, people like me and you, who we get criticized sometimes online, and we say to ourselves, hurt people.
Right.
Which makes us feel better. But are there just some people that are wired to hurt people?
Yeah, let's look at psychopathology. Psychopaths, okay? So this is something Dr. Hare developed.
Did you listen to the episode I did called The Psychopath Next Door?
I'm not sure.
Because I read that book. You should, yeah. Because I probably don't know what I'm talking about. But I think they were saying like one in four people are, is that possible?
I don't think it's that much.
4%. It's 4%. So 4 out of 100 people.
Yeah, so 1 in 25.
And that we're living amongst a lot of people.
Right, but there are different types of psychopaths.
That don't have empathy.
Right, right.
And they know enough to fake it. Sorry to keep interrupting, but they can fake.
No, you're not sorry. This is what you do. This is great. I understand it and I love it. Don't worry about it. Yes. Well, the smart psychopaths recognize it, what other people do, and they realize, I need to fake that in order to get to those people. I need in order to fit in. But most psychopaths are like thrill seekers, and so they're really engaging, and they're gregarious, and people want to be around them. Right?
Why is that? Why are they thrill seekers?
Because they have a very high tolerance for excitement. They need excitement and action and movement in order to so that they won't be bored. And people are just things for them. They literally are born with no empathy, and they can't develop it. So they literally use people.
But why is that? When you say
people have, you know, look, when we're being formed, you know, our genes mix in different ways. There's billions of possibilities, hundreds of billions or billions of billions of possibilities.
But why can't, if they can teach themselves
to mimic,
can't they teach themselves to have empathy? And
because it's an emotion. But you can't create that.
Don't you find, and I'm speaking personally for myself, that my empathy has grown as I've gotten older. So
sure.
I'll give you a current example. A kid, 18 years old, just graduated from high school, this week jumped off of a boat in the Bahamas.
Yeah,
okay, it was like a pirate type boat. They were on a cruise. It was a booze cruise. Not too sure why 18-year-olds are on a booze cruise.
Really?
But do you know this story?
Yes, I do.
On a dare, jumped off, and you can hear, somebody started videotaping, and you can hear a kid going, bye-bye! Bye, 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 see you later. And I'm thinking, that kid, for me, I would almost want to vomit, because you know this kid's probably not going to make it.
Well, he didn't make it, and, you know, he just disappeared. And, you know, we don't know if he just drowned, sank, or was taken
by a shark or another. But the thing is, that kid that's yelling, bye-bye, that kid can grow up. Because I could see me as a younger person not being fully empathetic to the situation.
Not
so why is my empathy growing? And I'll get one more example. Bob Dylan wrote Blowing in the Wind in his early 20s.
Right.
I still couldn't write that song now. I don't have that level of empathy.
So, well, I don't know if empathy gave him the ability to write that song, but when you do have empathy, you did have empathy when you were a child, you're getting a more refined sense of it right now as you're older. That's normal because you've had more experiences. You've seen pain and suffering. You've experienced pain and suffering. So that's why you can project to other people. With psychopaths, they literally have no capacity for that. They look at you as a human being. They look at you the same way they look at a chair, because it is just functional for them. They don't have any human connection. It is a defect that they are born with. And some embrace it. Some realize it and rejoice in it, celebrate it, and find ways to take advantage of other people because they realize, hey, it doesn't hurt me to step on someone else. That's why there are CEO psychopaths. They may not be malevolent, right? But they know that they can, by stepping on these other people, rise to the top. And so that's why they got there. Most people will realize, if I'm going to try to be a CEO or the president of the United States, I have to defeat other people. Yeah. I have to make myself look better. I have to do all these things. It's just not in me. But I don't want to.
Are they dangerous? Should we be scared of these people?
Some psychopaths, yes, are very malevolent. They're negative. They embrace the dark side. They make choices in their brain to, instead of trying to find ways to avoid it. Like Dr. James Fallon. He was a University of California at Irvine professor who was studying the genetics of psychopaths. And he found out that there was one in his family. Mm. He was actually a descendant of Lizzie Borden, that she was like a great aunt.
The ex person.
But listen, he discovered it was him. He's a psychopath. Huh. And so he has the psychopath gene, but...
Don't you think he knew that going in? I'm going to study that. Don't you think he knew?
No, I don't think he knew. He was shocked. He was maybe that created in his subconscious, a desire to learn more about it. Maybe. Yeah. But he realizes, and he tries to use it for good. He's a brilliant mind. Mm. Brilliant mind. Great friend of mine.
Well, when you were in the FBI, mm-hmm. you interviewed serial killers.
Yes.
Can you talk about any of those that you interviewed?
Well, yeah. So let's talk about Joseph Spengler.
Okay. And when you're interviewing Joseph Spengler, are you alone in the room with him? Just you and him one-on-one?
We do it several different ways. Okay. We sometimes script it because we want to use the person that is going to make that person open up the most. So sometimes we sit outside and feed questions, and we watch, and we videotape, but we do it through a person who will be less
the conduit.
Yeah, well, somebody would be less threatening to that person. Somebody who that subject that we're interviewing will feel omnipotent over. Mm. In other words, somebody that in that case we said this guy's got a huge ego, and if we get somebody who can look up to him, who will visibly be able to portray that, oh my God, I can't believe I'm in your presence, then that person is going to get him to open up more than somebody who has an authoritative voice or somebody who's got a very, you know, New York City kind of attitude.
So was that person you?
No, I did it. We picked somebody to do it, and we were very successful in getting him to open up, and he admitted to the fact that he killed his first wife and teenage son and daughter. And then he pushed his third wife off of the Grand Canyon. His second wife came back to commiserate with
him. I've always said, by the way, not to make light of it, but if you don't think you're in a good relationship, stay off mountains and canyons. You know what I mean?
I
do it in my joke.
I think that's good advice.
I go, you know, single people aren't falling backwards off a cliff having their picture taken.
And when you said that, that's exactly how he pushed his third wife off the Grand Canyon. And you know what he did after that? Because he's a psychopath. He volunteered to do a safety video for the National Park Service, which they were showing to people. And he's talking about how, yeah, well, you know, she was standing here and I looked down to do something on the focus, and I looked up and she was gone. She must have just slipped on this loose gravel. And he says, you know, I was here and I tried to reach for her, but, you know, of course, I almost fell myself.
Yeah.
He shoved her off.
Will they admit to you, I have no empathy? I have no feeling.
Yes,
I don't
care. These are the things we interview for. So we have like 800 questions that we ask them.
And so they'll say, I don't care about that my wife is dead. I don't care about her family, siblings.
This is what he said when he killed his wife, right? He said he told her to come down for Christmas. There was a surprise in the basement, had her close her eyes, sit on the chair. He grabbed the gun. He shot her at an angle where he thought she would shoot herself. And then he dropped the gun where he thought it would lay. And they said, no, wait. I went upstairs and took care of the kids first. Well, what he meant by that was, I shot my daughter from across the room and killed her. And my son woke up, so he kind of got up and I shot him. He was moving, so it wasn't fatal. So I had to figure out, well, how would my wife kill him? So I took a pillow and I smothered him. And he says, then he goes, this is what's chilling. Of course, he struggled, but he was no match for me.
Wow.
This is his 14-year-old son.
Yeah, wow.
Who he gave friggin' life to.
Right.
And he kills him. And then he goes and watches a movie and comes back to discover them dead. Hmm. And the cops bought it because he was,
What year is that?
Well, that was in the 70s, 76 or 78.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he went on to kill two more wives. And he was about to bring his fourth wife to the Grand Canyon for their honeymoon.
Oh, wow.
When we arrested him.
So how many people did he kill total?
Well, five total.
When do you become a serial killer? How many kills?
Well, it's two or more. It's more of a qualitative analysis than just a quantitative analysis.
Did you tell me this? It's like you could actually only kill one person, but have the mindset of a serial
killer. Absolutely.
And you're still a serial killer?
But you just got caught early, right? Yeah. Or somebody, you know, somebody shoots you back, you know. But yeah, that's absolutely true. So, you know, the federal statute to be a serial killer, to give the FBI primary jurisdiction, is three or more in separate incidents. Three or more murders in separate incidents. But in the BAU, we say two or more in separate incidents.
BAU.
Behavioral Analysis Unit.
Okay.
That's where the profile is.
What year was that started?
Well, it was started in the 70s by John Douglas. John came a little later. Teton. And I can't remember the other guy's name. Sorry.
So
Roger something or other.
Would you say the 70s?
Yeah.
So this is a more recent sort of division.
Yeah, this is a development after many years of observing that when people have psychological issues, it shows up in their crimes. And so if you look at their crimes, you can reverse engineer back to the type of person who committed the crime. And that's what we do.
So all serial killers go to the FBI, all those cases?
Well, yeah, all those cases, we study them. Yes, we have jurisdiction on them, but we also study them from around the world. So we study all violent crimes and sexual crimes so that we can educate other cops about it. They don't have time. They're doing their job. So we get to study it and then educate the cops about it.
Are there, when you study crimes all over the world, two questions. One, does America disproportionately have more crime than other countries? I understand probably guns.
Certainly guns.
And two, has there been an uptick in overall violent crimes in the last 50, 100 years? And, you know, it just seems like the obsession with crime and all the podcasts. I know you do Jim does a huge podcast on Wondery called True Crime Profile.
Real Crime Profile.
Real Crime Profile. Yeah. Huge. Almost 100 million downloads.
Yeah, we're over 100 million now.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, but I feel like, does this lead to more crime? Does this glorify it?
No, I don't think so. Not at all. I think
I just gave you three questions.
I know. So, I know. And now I have to go back and remember them. But uptick in terms of crime. Crime follows waves. It goes up and down. And I think part of that has to do with society as a whole. I mean, post-COVID, we're getting a lot of people who are much more depressed. Right. And depression has gone up and anxiety has gone up. And I think those things can lead to aggression, right? And for example, I just did an episode yesterday about road rage because something happened to me on the road when I was driving, and I just couldn't. It made no sense, but I knew to back off and not pursue. But other people,
do you want
pursue.
To tell the story?
I just did it on my podcast. So.
Yeah, I mean, you okay. wanted me to tell the story about me and the guy on the bike
I'll tell
that
you.
I got into it with. Turned okay. out that
you didn't tell me yet.
Well, I'll tell you really quickly.
Okay,
I was on Cahuenga, and the guy kept veering into a bike, and we were trying to, you know, go around him, and it sort of like almost felt like he was doing it on purpose. And the person I was with honked really aggressively. He gives a finger. I roll down the window. I have words, and then he looks at me and he says, "Aren't you Orny Adams?"
The same thing happened to Joe Pesci.
Yeah, okay. And by the way, and I said to him, I did say before he said that, I go, "Hey, buddy, we just want to make sure you're okay because we got stuck at a red light." I played it on the last podcast, so I don't want to recap.
I know,
it,
I heard it. But all right, so the same thing happened to Joe Pesci. The night I met Joe Pesci, we were having dinner with Robert De Niro. It was crazy. And Joe Pesci shows up, and De Niro tells him that I'm in the FBI, right? So he comes up and he hugs me and he goes, "Oh, so you think you're tough because you got a gun, huh?" He goes, "That's all right. I got 3 ice picks on me right now. And I can jab you here, I can jab you here, and I can jab you here." And he jabbed me. He hit me with his fist under, like, under my chin, just like pretending he was going to jab me. But he hit me pretty hard. I'm like, "What the fuck?" And he's like, "Ah, I'm sorry." He goes, "Yeah, I get out of control sometimes." He seemed very manic. Anyway, he said, "I was driving the other day and this truck cut me off. So I drove really fast ahead of him and I cut him off and I parked so he couldn't move. And next thing I know, I'm up on the side of the truck. I grabbed him by the hair and I was punching him in the face. And he looks up at me and says, 'Aren't you Joe Pesci?' And he goes, 'I had to leave town for 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So, you really punched somebody? Yeah.
You punched somebody.
Well,
so.
To me, it's weird that anybody would know me. So, but my new policy is
you're
I'm saying
a famous person and
famous.
I have touched you there.
Yeah, I've
punched your fist.
So what's your road? Because I also have a theory that there used to be road rage and it was good old road rage. And in the early days, people just yelled at each other, got back in their cars. Now people are getting shot, but road rage.
500 shootings in the United States for road rage incidents that are reported in 2022 alone.
You see,
500, one and a half a day, or one and three quarters a day.
Yeah, it feels like you just yell at each other and you get it out and get back. But now there's road rage everywhere. It's on airplanes. It's in stores. It's everywhere you
see. It's just life rage.
Life rage.
And I think it is a collective problem with the country. I think we're all having these after effects of COVID, being locked down, being afraid for our lives, not knowing what the hell's happening, taking these vaccines, not knowing if they're going to be good for us or bad for us. All this kind of stuff is just compiling. I mean, piling up, and people are, you know, when they're at the edge, when they're stressed out, they act to their extremes. And that's what you're seeing.
And
you're
still going on.
Extreme behavior. Yes, of course.
So with your FBI profiler BAU brain, you believe that our brains have changed.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, brains are malleable. They're organic, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't change permanently, right? Unless you get a traumatic brain injury, you could have permanent brain damage, right? But if your brains do change with the times, and that's part of the alacrity of our you know, being able to think about new things and do new things and learn new things for our whole lives.
Yeah.
But they can change back. You know, it's all psychology.
So this brings us to one of the topics that you texted me was mass depression.
Yeah, I think we're in the middle of that. And it's,
which I brought up on my podcast.
You did. Yeah. You did. And I thought that was very astute of you because it does have ramifications. You talked, and this was amazing because it brought us back to the beginning of the pandemic when we're first being forced to stay in. And like people are in different environments and your environment may not be very good. Let's say you're in an environment where you're being domestically abused.
Right.
You're forced now to be in the house with that person 24/7. That really creates problems.
Sure.
Let's say you're in a situation where you're in a long distance relationship and now you can't see each other at all. Right. The loneliness, the fear of what's going to happen, all those things like build up in your system.
But why do we feel more distant? Like I declared on my podcast, you know, we had the stay at home order. I want to get out of your house order, a stay out order, because I think that we're spending too much time. We've got to stop working from home. It doesn't work. Like when I call customer service and I ordered.
The baby's crying in the background.
Yeah, I can't stand it.
And the dog's barking.
Yeah, I'm like, what is this? Your reception sucks. Like, get back to an office. Everybody, for your mental health, get out of your house.
Yeah.
And people, where even me, I just, like, it's Friday night. I want to do nothing. I want to do nothing.
All right.
I don't want to be around people.
Okay, so you have phobia, right?
Phobia, fear of being included.
And that's another one that we'll get to, but I'll get to it right now. I'm right in there with phobia. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Like, and I think part of it is COVID. You know, like, people don't understand. It still has residual effects. I mean, I had a bone marrow transplant almost 19 years ago. And 19 years ago, I had to be in isolation for 6 months. I had to wear a mask and gloves if I ever went out to public. Yes, and I was in isolation.
You're like the boy in the bubble.
I was in a bubble. My house became a bubble. And after that, like, you know, people who come up to you and you give them a hug and they try to kiss you on the lips.
Yeah.
Like, that freaked me out for so long. And it's like flashback now with COVID. The same thing. I don't want people to be kissing me because I don't know who they were breathing next to before or who they're kissing right before they kiss me. I have a particularly weak immune system, so I have to watch all this stuff, you know?
And this is a result, if you're just tuning in, this is Jim Clemente, former FBI profiler. You were part of the cleanup crew at 9/11.
Well, the rescue crew at 9/11, yeah, sure, and cleanup, you know, but... But yeah,
so you were down there on 9/11?
Well, I got there. It took me a while to get to downtown because of all the traffic. Yeah. I got there at 5 in the morning. But
on the 12th?
Yeah.
And you were still looking for bodies?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. For days we were. Yeah.
And then you...
I got cancer and I had a bone marrow transplant. But, you know, so that has effects. And so, but the mass depression... is something that I think as a country, we're still seeing a rise in it and anxiety. And I think it's going to peak, you know, hopefully in the next year or two and then go back down. So I think everybody's brains will also accommodate that as long as we can, you know, sort of get through this. And I love the fact that you're saying, you know, we need to talk to each other. We need to put down our devices and be human with each other and interact. That's all important, and there's no reason for us to be, you know, at loggerheads just because somebody thinks differently. I mean, you think very differently to me, but we're great friends. Yeah. I mean, we can see each other's perspectives and or at least appreciate them.
I don't think we're that far off.
No, I don't think our perspectives are that off, but you think very differently from me,
which is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. And do you know the science of laughter?
No, tell me.
Oh, well, this is amazing. It's your brain. It's somebody telling a story, and you expect a particular ending, but it twists. There's something else that also makes sense that you didn't foresee. But so your brain says, aha, and it makes you laugh.
But couldn't it also be that you're saying something that you don't think should be said?
But that's probably another thing that you didn't expect. Something you don't expect that makes sense, that like it's an aha moment in your brain. And that's how you respond.
And I know that you love comedy. I'm going to tell you something, and maybe this will surprise you, maybe not. But having empathy makes you a worse comedian.
Really?
Because you don't joke about things that you used to. Like, all of a sudden, you're like, I can't talk about obese kids. Because there's people in the audience that probably have obese kids. But when you're younger, you don't think like that. You just say it.
Right.
So empathy can be the enemy of stand-up comedy because you start thinking too much. You really do. Do you want to tell... We're going to wrap this episode up soon and we're going to do another episode.
Yeah.
You're going to stick around for episode 83.
I'll stick around.
And then you'll end up going to lunch with me. I know you said you didn't want to go to lunch, but... You know, what's wrong with Orny Adams? We got the budget to take you out today if you want.
Really? Wow, that's pretty amazing.
There's a diner down the street.
Can we go in the Shasta?
Yeah, we could just airlift this over the fence. I would love to take this on the road sometime.
I know.
I don't think it would hold up, but we'll
it looks pretty sturdy.
I don't know.
I'm
going to get Leno up here.
Been around since 1960.
I'm going to get Leno up here to check it out.
Oh, that'd be great.
You know,
by the way, thank you for having me on the radio show the other day, right after Jay Leno. I mean, that's a tough act to follow.
Yeah,
he was great.
I was filling in on KFI AM 640 here in Los Angeles. It's a huge station, and Tim Conway Jr., who's become my friend, put me on as a, I subbed for him.
Right.
He wasn't there on a Friday. I did the whole 3 hours. I interviewed you and Jay Leno.
Yeah.
And now Jay's become my good friend.
That's great.
But here's what I really love about you and your honesty and creating awareness for me. I felt like the interview with Jay didn't go as well as I wanted it to. And I didn't even say that to you. But right. I just got a sense that he just didn't get comfortable.
Right.
And you called me and you said, could I, you know.
Well, I talked to you about it. I had said you were great and all that. But I said, you've always wanted me to be completely honest with you. And I said, it seemed like Jay was uncomfortable. And you go, yeah, yes, I felt the same way. He never relaxed. He never like did that tit for tat back and forth stuff. Yeah. And I said, yeah, well, at one point he actually voiced his concern. And he said, you want me to tell you about when I bombed on stage? What it felt like when I bombed on stage? After you asked him that question.
Yeah.
And I said, that may be the thing. Because that's sort of the negative side of it, right? And I said, you know, maybe he wanted to tell people, you know, the elation he feels and what keeps him going, you know,
you said,
the
you
good
said,
things.
You made it very concise. You said, I think all your questions were negative.
A lot of them were. Your thematically.
Yeah, truly. Welcome to What's Wrong with the Winnie Adams.
Yeah, there you go.
It's the negative take on the world. So here's what I did.
I
started to spin out. I was in the car. I called Jay. Jay's mad at me now. Jay put me on the Tonight Show. I'll tell the story someday.
Yeah.
Jay, I have such admiration and respect for this guy, for what he's done for me and is still doing for me.
I love
those
appearances
into the studio,
you did.
Yeah, to help me at this radio appearance. By the way, I'm back on the radio KFI this Sunday, 4 to 7 p.m.
Great.
Yeah.
I called you back. I told you were natural.
So I called Jay because now I'm worried. Was I too negative? Did I offend him? Like, should I have said, what's it like when you're killing on stage? So I called Jay. And it rang 1.5 times. He sent me the voicemail. I go, oh no, oh no. And 4 hours.
Downward spiral.
Yeah, 4 hours later, he called me back. And not to bust your bubble, but that wasn't the case.
Okay.
And,
well, I know. I'm happy.
I'm not going to divulge the private conversation we had. But he's since called me again. Jay and I are now best friends. He's giving me advice. He's helping me with my new radio career.
Oh, wow.
He's helping me negotiate a private gig that's in 2024. And Jay is a really smart guy. He's got unbelievable stories. He was telling me about.
He spoke
Joey
at the
Fisher.
FBI at the FBI lunch, you know, a couple of years ago, and I talked to him afterwards. What a great guy!
It blows my mind that I talk to these people on the phone that I grew up like watching on TV,
right.
Then writing jokes for. Tell us
that's how people feel about you,
Ornie. In the next episode, we're gonna wrap up sociopaths. Wrap up sociopaths. And catfishers, because we never got into that, because this is what happens, Jim. This is why we've got to do just a completely separate show all the time. But is your road rage story, is it a good story to end on?
All right, well, I'll tell you what happened. I mean, basically, I set my car. My car is electric, and I set my car for a speed to maximize the use of the electricity, so I'm
dork.
Not wasting it.
Dork.
So, no, well, I do it. Yeah. I do it because, you know, I'm conscious of how much electricity I use. So I'm going... And I pass an on-ramp right to my right, and I see a truck pulling a trailer with some muscle car on the back of it.
Oh, boy.
And you know, so I'm passing him at 65 miles an hour. The speed limit is 70. And I'm in the slow lane because of that.
Yeah.
And I pass him. So it's a very long ramp. And I see out of my side view mirror that he is racing down this ramp. I'm kind of concerned.
Right.
But, you know.
What state are we in?
We're in Arizona.
Whoa. What are you doing with an electric car in Arizona? Let's start there.
And let me just tell you something else. Guess what state has the number one incidence of road rage?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
No, don't give me a hint.
Arizona!
All right. You just blew the speakers with that yell. Yeah, and I just spit on the board. So what happened? Did you get out and fight?
No, I didn't get out and fight. So he came up, and I passed the entrance, you know, where he's going to come on, just before he comes on behind me, and he's blaring his horn and flashing his lights and pounding his steering wheel, and I can see the
way this is getting too loud.
I can see the rage in his face.
Yeah, oh, even more.
He's throwing. Yeah. Bing, he's throwing.
Oh,
whoa!
Geez.
I just ruined it.
Okay, go ahead. Keep going.
And he's throwing a fit, right?
Yeah.
And I just totally disengage. I just zen my way out of it. He like, oh, I couldn't pull into the left lane to let him on because there's a car right behind me on the left.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm driving safely. And, you know, the people that are on the highway have the right of way. And when you merge on, you're supposed to merge on after traffic that's in front of you, not into traffic yeah. that's in front of you. So anyway, I just zenned. And I actually just let the car slow down. And he, like, raced around me and cut me off and then sped off, you know. Now, what a lot of people will do, because they're in the right, is chase that person.
Mm.
And that's when people get shot.
Right. Not worth
it. Poor father who had four kids in the van. Waved down to a guy, whoa, slow down.
Yeah.
And they shot him dead.
Yeah.
In front of his kids.
When was this?
Just recently.
Oh, did you hear about the dad who got out to help the ducks across the street and he got hit and killed?
No.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
happens
yeah.
all the time.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. If I were you, if somebody was doing that to me, I'd just roll down my window and I'd zen out. I'd look at him and I'd say, let me tell you my three favorite letters. FBI. And you, I know you don't like to pull that card because I was with you once. We don't have to tell the story. But I'm like, tell them you're FBI. Tell them you're FBI. Get out of this situation. Pull out your badge because you have a badge, but you don't do it. Why not?
Because we're not supposed to do that.
Well, who cares?
Well,
who cares?
Not the people that are letting people go away with a basket of liquor every week.
Yeah, come on. Break the rules. Who cares? You can say I'm former FBI. Back up, buddy.
No, I don't. Oh, do that.
God.
No.
Jim Clemente, will you stick around for another episode?
I will.
We have so much.
Always great, Orny. Yes. Okay. And we're going to get right into it next time. This is chitter chatter.
That's right. What's Wrong with Orny Adams, episode 82. My guest today, Jim Clemente, I want to thank you. I want to thank Ernesto Hurtado for mastering this. I want to thank you, the listeners. It's like NPR.
Me too.
Yeah. I want to thank the people that subscribe and like, write reviews, the people that subscribe to my Patreon to get the video. The video will be up next week. And then the video for episode 83 will be up. And Jim Clemente, you're amazing.
Always great being here.
Proud to call you a friend.
Yeah, me too. Orny, you're a great guy.
Yeah. Let's do episode, stick around. Episode 83 will be out next week with Jim Clemente.
Great.
Thanks, everybody.